Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Born to Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcia Witeka. Conversations plus connections equals community. Those are my three C's. The heart of my show is, what's your story? It's my belief we all have stories. Some are similar, others are uniquely different. Storytelling brings the passions of my guests to life through our conversations. So be prepared to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Welcome to today's show. Well, hi, everybody. I'm so excited about the show today. My guest is Eric G. He's that and so much more. He's a writing and life coach. He's the author of The Power of Personality, and he's the creator of the Utopia Project, which we're going to be talking about. Let's just start off by saying, welcome to the show, Eric. I'm so happy you're joining me today.
Oh, I'm happy to be here, and thank you for having me, Marcia.
My pleasure. You have an interesting background, and I thought perhaps you could just tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself so that they can get to know you let's use that word personality, on that personal level. Tell us about yourself, Eric.
Busting out the old CV. I started my educational background is in English literature and screenwriting. So basically it's a creative writing background. And then I kind of just fell into education and tutoring and mentoring. And I've been doing that for about over 20 years now. And for a decade, I owned this education company. And through that education company, I was able to, I guess, sharpen this personality typing methodology that I've been studying also for over 20 years. And from that, I just, you know, sharpened it up. I wrote a book on it, and now the book's out. And now I'm just trying to spread the word. The book's called The Power of Personality, by the way, if anyone looks at it, wants to look that up. And it's basically a book on how to understand people better.
Well, you know, I like the cover of your book. I think that the cover is deliberate. And, right, well, like you said, the power of personality. But I like the underscore, which says, unlock the secrets to understanding everyone in your life, including yourself, which I think that including yourself is brilliant. I think whoever helped you design that cover, I think was a great idea. And for those of you listening, I just want to tell you, Eric has a fabulous website, and I'm going to spell this for you because, you know, words matter. Words matter a lot to me. So the Utopia Project is the word you, Y-O-U-T-O-P-I-A Project, project.com. And it's a terrific website. In fact, you have a couple of websites. But I highly recommend that people visit this website because, gosh, there's so much on here. I love your website. So let me ask you something. Well, I'm going to be asking a lot of some things, right? So there you go. I mean, what's the point of not having questions here, right? It explains my personality. Do people really want, do you think, to know more about themselves?
You know, I guess maybe that's the problem, is that people are never taught to want to learn more about themselves. I think, you know, there's Gardner, which is, I don't want to name drop here, but Howard Gardner came up with these like seven intelligences, and two of those are intrapersonal and interpersonal. I mentioned these in the book, which are basically knowing more about yourself, which is the intrapersonal, and knowing more about other people, which is the interpersonal. And those are two things that we never really learn in school. So we always focus on the mathematical, logical, and the verbal, linguistic. Mm-hmm. And that's what we get tested on for IQ tests. But it's one of those things where we're not encouraged to. And so thus, I don't think the average person wants to know about themselves too much, or maybe they think they know themselves better than they actually do. And that's unfortunate because, you know, that's part of being happy, is really knowing what we want.
I think you're right. I think having an understanding about yourself does a lot about explaining yourself. And sometimes life circumstances sends you in that direction. I think I've always known about myself. I've never maybe focused to the level that I'm focusing today on myself. I think I changed that focus when my husband passed, but I know that I've always talked. I know that I've always been interested in people. I know that I've add things up and I'm observant. So I know those things about myself, and frankly, that's why I've run my class reunions. That's, you know, what I, it's not that I was that class president, but I paid attention to who hung out with who and who was friends with who and how people treated each other from elementary school, you know, from as long as I can remember. So I for me, I think this is fascinating. And why is it that people don't always know who they really are? Why do you think that is?
I think we get a lot of outside noise. You know, I think a lot of times when you're, I mean, everyone always blames social media nowadays, which is even more prevalent. But even when I was a kid, it was just like commercials and any media you see, it's trying to tell us, oh, these are the values you should have. And I think most of our lives are spent trying to justify our existence based on other people's values. And we're not really thinking about what do we want. In fact, we might not even, we might think that we want those things, even though it's just been programmed into us to do that. But when, like you said, when it comes down to, when you really think about your past, it's kind of almost pretty obvious what and who you are and what you want. Mm-hmm. And it's really more tapping into that as opposed to all like, and sometimes school doesn't really help either because school is telling us, oh, you should be a doctor, be an engineer, it's safe, you know. And sometimes people are not meant to be doctors and engineers. Sometimes people are meant to be bus drivers and Uber drivers and whatever, you know.
That's so fascinating. I'm digressing here for just a moment because you touched on a subject that makes sense to me, and that is I have two kids. My son works for the University of Arizona, and he's in a line of work that is perfect for his personality in the Eller Business College. My daughter, like yourself, went to UCLA, got a degree in theater arts. However, she has the personality of her father, who was an engineer. Mm-hmm. And she is 17 years into commercial construction because that is really what fit her personality. She got that stage presence just like you got the creative writing that incorporated into where you are. I tell people she just performs on a different stage. And so we just never really know. But if we're satisfied in our life, I think what you would say is that we end up finding and closing out that outside noise so that we can really establish who we are. And I think what you've come to decide is that are the old personality typing methods, are those outdated now, would you say?
You know, I mean, I think they are. I mean, some of them are over 100 years old, the Myers-Briggs, and a lot of that goes back to Carl Jung, who's like even, I'd say, 150 years. I don't have my Wikipedia out with me, but I'd say it's at least a decade or a century and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that introversion, extroversion thing. I think a lot of them are nice, and they were there because they focused on things on the surface because that's what people can observe. But like I write about in The Power of Personality, a lot of the volunteers for these sample sizes were a specific type of personality because there's certain personality types that are more than willing to donate their time and their energy and volunteer for things, and others do not. So thus, all those samples are based on a specific type of person. So when they talk about introversion, extroversion, they're dealing with things that only really are accurate for maybe half the population, you know, versus, and that's also very surface. Like a lot of times I get arguments with people on personality typing where they're just like, oh, yeah, but this is all garbage because, you know, I'm extroverted in this situation and I'm introverted in this situation. And I can't help but agree because I think there's more to it than that. I think our values are what dictate how we act, and they dictate our personality type, and that's a lot deeper, not just a little bit deeper, but a lot deeeper than a lot of the things that the MBTI tests and other personality tests focus on.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we've mentioned your book, and I like I said, I love the title of your book. I love the way your book looks. So let's talk a little bit more about your book. Tell us more about your book, and then we will really get into the specifics. But on a general focus, tell us what this book is about.
So this book is basically will teach the reader to actually be a personality test, essentially. Because I always found it odd that, you know, we have these books and they have like a personality test in the front that is supposed to be meant for everyone. So essentially it is pretty cookie cutter. There might be 40 questions, 50 questions, whatever. It'll take you about 5 minutes to do it. And you take the test, and then by these results, then the rest of the book is filled with prescriptions. But I've always wondered, like, what if the test was wrong? You know, the diagnosis is wrong, then it doesn't really matter the treatment. The treatment can actually sometimes be damaging. So my book, The Power of Personality, is basically teaching someone my method of personality typing so they themselves can understand and read people better. It also encourages people to not focus so much on being so certain of things. It's more about encouraging people to constantly or be in a constant mode of getting new information about the people around them, including themselves, and maybe their understanding of someone deepens. And maybe they, at the beginning, they might go, oh, yeah, they're a shark, which is one of the personality types, as my personality types are animal-based. But they might be like, oh, this person's a shark. And then they'd be like, oh, you know what, maybe not. Maybe they're a different animal now that I've gotten to know them a little better. But that's essentially the gist of the book.
Do you think that we start doing this at a very young age? I mean, I'm thinking about myself and the people I've met along my life. Do you think we start doing this as children?
You mean by this, you mean like trying to understand people and read them? Or?
Right, and their personalities.
I think we might do it in the subconscious. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think we do it in a subconscious level. Like, we're like, oh, these people are more like me, so I'm going to hang out with them. And I think that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think it becomes a danger when we start going, these people are not like me, so I need to make sure that they become more like me. I think that's a bit of a danger. I just recall thinking about my father and how he parented us and how, I mean, he doesn't know anything about personality typing. His background was not in psychology. It was in engineering. And yet he treated all of my siblings differently, you know, and it was really awesome because when I look back at my siblings' personalities, the way he treated them was actually pretty perfect for what we needed to grow as kids. You know, I think at a subconscious level, we understand it.
That's so interesting because when I have conversations with interesting people like yourself, and I obviously don't know your answers, you just made me reflect on my own father. My father worked for the state of California. He was worked in the Department of Highways or whatever it was called back a million years ago, but he was very artistic. My brother inherited that, and he was encouraged to be artistic. And ultimately, my brother got a degree in art and became an art teacher at the local, in those days they were called junior highs, they became middle schools. But it was definitely connected to my father's personality, which is really interesting. It's really interesting how that happens and how people in our lives can affect our lives even when we're much older. My mother-in-law had an enormous impact on my life. And, you know, I didn't meet her till I was in my very early 20s. And she had a very specific personality. And what is so interesting is that my daughter has that same personality. I'm observant about things like that. So I was interesting what you just said about your own father. In your book, you refer to four main packs of people, and you had mentioned a little earlier they're animals. I thought we could talk about them, what they are, and this. I'd like to really focus in on that because we have ample time to talk about this, and I'm really very interested in knowing about this. So why don't we start? Why don't you name the four packs, and then we'll delve it a little deeper. What are those four packs?
So the four packs are based on, I'd say, old school, like medieval, which you imagine would be in a medieval village, the types of people that would be there. So there would be gatherers, hunters, shamans, and smiths. And
smith.
Just like their percentages,
okay.
Smiths, like a blacksmith.
Mm-hmm. Got
but
it.
But I call them smiths just because, yeah, like they're
sure.
Basically the equivalent now would be like a technocrat.
Okay.
And it's basically the focus on the percentages in the population. So you'd imagine if you had this village, I always ask people, like, what would you have more of? And people are like, well, gathers. And I'm like, yeah, you'd have more gathers. And such is the case nowadays, even though we don't have villages anymore, and we're not totally gathering crops from the field, we have a larger percentage of gathers in the population. They make up about maybe around 45 to 50% of the population, which is a lot. So their values tend to be pushed quite a bit in society. And then you have the hunters, and they make about a third of the population. And I always say there's less hunters because you need about the same amount of hunters as gatherers, but hunting is dangerous, so they used to die. And just like it is now, hunters tend to take professions that are a little more risky and dangerous than a gatherer might. And then from there, you have the shamans and the smiths who don't make up that large percentage of the population, just like they would in a village, right? Like, you don't really need one shaman to tell the gatherers when it's going to rain so that they can, you know, sow the field. But you need a lot of gatherers to, like, actually harvest. And you only need one smith creating the weapons, but you do need a lot of hunters to use the weapons. So that kind of explains why there's so few of those. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why
and each one of them has a different value. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm so sorry. And you actually just led me into exactly what I wanted to ask you and what I'm really interested in focusing on in this portion of our podcast, which is to really delve a little bit deeper into what do the gatherers value most of all.
Right. And this is an important part of my methodology because the previous ones, I mean, I evolved from MBTI and I did a lot of studying on that topic and that research, but what I found was that it was so focused on surface things like, are you extroverted, introverted? Are you thinking or feeling, as if we can dictate that one or the other? But what I found come to find was that we value different things, and that's one of the things that a lot of people don't accept. I think we accept differences on a superficial level. Like, you might accept that the person next to you might not be as organized as you, or they might not be as talkative as you. But generally speaking, most people are going to think, oh, I value my family. And, of course, everybody values family the same way I do. But that's just not true. You know, like I always say, if that was true, when was the last time you heard about Einstein's family? You know, and people are always like, Einstein had a family. Well, he did have a daughter. He was not the best father. You know, he was not the most loving father. Mm-hmm. And you know what? That's okay because all of our families have benefited from his value, you know. Sorry, that was a long-winded way of me saying why I was important.
No, but that's interesting. Right.
So, yeah, so gatherers value safety and security. So it's important that they make up a large percent of the population because they basically keep our civilization secure. Like, they make sure that we don't fall into absolute anarchy and make sure there are rules and that we follow the rules. And granted, that's not always the most fun to be, like, rule followers per se. It's not the most glamorous. But it sure is nice to have things like a warm bed and running water, you know, and other aspects of civilization that we often take for granted. And that's all because of the gatherers. So hunters, they value excitement and visceral excitement specifically. So it might not – I mean, obviously excitement is something where people are just happy to do something. But in this case, it's more – they want to experience the most out of life when it comes to their senses. They want to taste everything, see everything, smell everything, feel everything, hear everything. And that is kind of what their value system is, which means they often take chances because they like that feeling of risk and adrenaline and excitement, you know, that they like their heart beating really quickly. And you could see how that might contrast with gatherers who don't want that sense at all. They want to feel, like, comforted and, you know, like that hunter adrenaline does not make them feel comforted. It makes them feel scared. So you can imagine those two types of people clashing quite a bit, especially in the workforce.
Sure, because you're saying, if I understood what you were saying correctly, the hunters are sort of census-based thinkers. How do they feel?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Did I understand that correctly?
Mm-hmm.
And feelings where the gatherers, they're not so focused on how you feel. They're more focused on your safety and your security. Did I understand that right?
Right. The best example I can give, and forgive me if I tell this story. I've been telling it quite a bit, but I was shucking oysters with my cousin's son, and he's 24 or 25, and we were just talking, and I was teaching him how to shuck oysters because he had never done that before, and he was very quick, and he learned it very quickly, and he was talking about what he wants to do now, or I asked him what he wanted to do now that he just graduated pharmacy school, and he was just like, I don't know, as long as I don't have to do the same job or be in the same place for the whole day. And I was like, boy, did you pick the wrong job? That's what pharmacists do. And I was like, hey, maybe you want to do something like pharmaceutical sales, because that way you'll get to travel, you'll get to meet different people, you know, and he's totally down for that. You know, he does not mind the hustle. He does not mind the risk of having to put yourself out there and sell something and get rejected, that, you know, maybe your salary will be not necessarily commensurate with the hard work that you put in, and sometimes it might be even more. Whereas his mother and father, one's a pharmacist and the other is a doctor, they're gatherers. So when they told him that, recommended to him that he should go into pharmaceutical school, it was mainly because, you know, it's a safe profession. They were like, oh, he's going to get a job out once he graduates. It'll be perfect. You know, he'll be set. And it was just funny. I went in and his mom was like, wow, I'm surprised that he wanted to learn how to shuck oysters. And I'm like, why would he? He's a hunter. You know, in my mind, I didn't say that out loud, but he's a hunter. He likes using tools. He likes instant gratification. You know, he likes to, like, use a tool in 30 seconds, open up that oyster, and then see that he's done something great, you know, and then on to the next oyster, you know. And anyway, that's a kind of a perfect idea of the contrast between the two types, you know.
You know what? This is precisely why I love what I do. Because I like the fact that you've got the time, we have the time. I like these stories. I'm a story collector. What's your story is my tagline. And I appreciate you sharing that story. So let's talk about the shamans. What is a shaman and what do they value most?
So shamans value self-knowledge. And so you know how they have things like, what's the term? Oh, a midlife crisis. And I'm always thinking, that's a term that a gatherer came up with, because gatherers have midlife crises. Shamans do not, because their entire life is a midlife crisis. You know, from the day they're born, they're thinking, am I doing the right thing? I don't know. Do I love this? I don't know. I'm not sure. I need to learn more about myself. And as they learn more about themselves, then that's how they craft their life experience. So obviously it comes with a lot of good and bad, a lot of good in that they are the likeliest to work on the things that might make them truly happy. Of course, the bad is that they might find themselves feeling a little alienated from other people when those people are telling them they should value things that they might not. That comes with the territory. And there's not that many of them, so I often meet shamans all the time, and, you know, as a coach, and they're always just like, yeah, you know, I felt like I was a weirdo or an alien until I learned about this stuff and realized, oh, you know, I'm not alone. There are people out there like me, and I don't have to, you know, be like all the people that are around me all the time.
Yes, and they're the questioning one. That was the key word that I heard, that they're more the self-knowledge questioning personality. Did I understand that right?
Yeah, they tend to question themselves most of all. That's the number one
questioning,
thing. They question
right, not somebody
first.
Else,
yeah.
Themselves.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. That the themselves is pretty important. Now, we've talked about the Smiths, and, you know, it's really funny. When I saw that, I thought, the Smiths, I know somebody with that last name. It's like, no. No, you're missing something here. The blacksmith, those worker bees. So what do the Smiths value the most?
So the Smiths value information above all. You know, I used to call this knowledge.
Okay.
Knowledge, but then everybody was like, oh, that means I'm a Smith because I value knowledge. I'm like, well, oh, I mean, okay, not really. Like, you're not going to value knowledge more than safety and security unless you're a Smith, you know? And the question I always give people is, would you take an experimental drug and test it on yourself, even though it might do you bodily harm, to see if it worked or not? And I'm not saying that every Smith would say yes to that question, but they might consider it. They might, their eyes will go up and just go right to their, like to the top of their eyelids as they're, you know, thinking and pondering their decision. Whereas if you're a gatherer, you're, the first instinct is like, are you an idiot? Why would anyone do that? So,
interesting.
And so that's a Smith. Smiths are curious and they just want information. It doesn't necessarily make them geniuses, even though I think online the stereotype of this type is like that they're like brilliant because Einstein was that. But as a friend of mine is commonly says, you know, he's like, just because you're this type doesn't mean you're a genius. You know, I know a lot of, I have a lot of information on massage and fantasy football. That doesn't make me a genius. It just makes me a fantasy football and massage nerd, you know? So that's the Smith. They just like to know stuff.
Well, what I'm curious about is, can you ever be a combo of these personality packs?
You know, not. I mean, everyone asks that because everyone always wants the strengths of, you know, like when I say, oh, these are the strengths of this type, and this is the strengths of this type. And I really don't mean strengths. I just mean these are the things that a type tends to like instinctively. And I think if you like something and you're given the freedom to pursue that, then more than likely you will be good at it because you'll do it more often. It's not like being naturally good at something. So a lot of people want strengths of this type and that type. They want to merge. And I'm like, well, it's not about that. It's about values. And when it comes down to it, we prioritize our values. We have like core things. Like, for example, and you'll relate to this because I know you took the test and you got an elephant. One of my friends, he got an elephant as well. And he was talking to another friend who had just read the book. So I was really proud of that because he just read the book. So I'm like, wow, you absorbed all that information. That's fantastic. Because this elephant friend, he's like, well, you know, but I like to, like, do creative things and, like, you know, do all this, like, fun stuff. And, you know, obviously elephants like that stuff too. But I think when you hear about your value being safety and security, there's a stereotype that that's not part of the creative process, which I disagree with. But anyway, so this other friend was like, oh, yeah, but what job do you have? And he's like, oh, well, I have a safe job. And he's like, well, why do you have that safe job? And he's like, well, I got to make sure that I take care of my and provide for my family. And he's like, well, there you go. Like, that's your priority, right? That is your core value. And he's like, oh, yeah, you're right. That is, like, my first instinct, you know. Because in his mind, it would never come to his mind that he wouldn't do that or that someone might make a different decision, right? They might make a decision that doesn't necessarily sacrifice for their family and sacrifice their ambition for their family. So
that's interesting. So how can knowing about these four packs explain why ideas like the extrovert or the introvert and birth order are slightly deceptive? Tell us more about that.
Well, like a good idea or a good point is that gatherers make up half the population. So a lot of what we view as quote-unquote normal sociology is based a lot on gatherers, especially because they themselves value safety, security, community. They value like the stability of society. So they would be the most likely to volunteer for studies, like I mentioned before. And so in terms of extroversion, introversion, that was based a lot on the observations of Carl Jung, which was maybe 150 years ago. And I mean, I wasn't around 150 years ago, but what I can assume is that a lot of the people who volunteered for those studies and to be observed were gatherers. So for gatherers, the ways their personality manifests does have a lot to do with extroversion, introversion, where you get your energy from. But for the other types, not so much. You might have, like Smiths, for example, the way you'd separate the Smiths is you wouldn't say, oh, that's an extroverted Smith or that's an introverted Smith, because at the end of the day, they value information. So the way that you would divide the Smiths up into their four different personality types would be based on information, not on their social skills. And with birth order, it's really easy because if you are a gatherer and you are the oldest child, then you will really fall into what we assume the oldest child does, which is they are the most responsible, they value authority, they will look after their younger siblings, they figure it's their duty to keep the family together. Those are all gatherer values. So if you have an older sibling who is a gatherer, that's what they'll push. And it makes sense that people fell into birth order because since half the population are gatherers, then that means about half of the older siblings will be like that. And I think when we see that, we're like, oh, yeah, of course, that's how older siblings should be, because we see that more often than not. But, you know, half the time it's not going to be correct. I can tell
that's
from personal experience, my older sister is not a gatherer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my older sister is a hunter. So she did not definitely grow up. I did not grow up with my older sibling going, oh, you should listen to me because I'm the older sibling. It would be more, listen to me because you're annoying me and I want you to do what I want because I want to get what I want, which is a very hunter mentality.
That's funny.
Where our youngest sibling is a gatherer, and he is the one who, my younger brother, he's the one who, you know, texts us and is like, hey, what should we get mom for her birthday? And then my sister and I won't respond, and then be like, okay, how about this? Should we get her this? No response. Okay, I bought this. And then we respond, we're like, okay, cool, we'll Venmo you. You know, like, that's who he is, because he's a conscientious gatherer, even though he's the youngest. So.
Interesting. That's really, well, you know, I think, you know, if you plug everybody into, okay, this is who you are, then, you know, that in itself probably doesn't always fit. And the shoes got to fit both feet at the same time. And I think that's really, really interesting to me. And I love your website. I'm looking at it as we speak. And on your website, as people can scroll down, there's a place where you can take the personality test. It's very simple. It's not going to stress you out or make you cuckoo or anything like that. It's a multiple choice, and you just simply take it. And I so recommend that people go to your utopiaproject.com, scroll down. You'll see on the right-hand side underneath the cover of your book, you'll say, take the personality test, and that's what you'll do, and then you get the results. And so I do really recommend that people do that. And I found that I am an elephant. And I'm just going to say, because we do have the time for this, I want to read to our listeners what it says about an elephant. And this isn't in a way of just patting myself on the back. This is just what your personality type said about somebody that answered these questions, and this is how I was identified. It says, you are the friendliest of all types. You have a natural optimism towards all aspects of life, the people, the places, and society in general. It is almost impossible for someone to be lonely around you, as you love the idea of bringing all individuals into the fold. Taking care of others is your forte, and you do it with affectionate gusto. Most of all, you love that secure feeling you get when you're having fun with your loved ones, and if you had one wish, it's hard to read this, it would be to share that feeling of contentment with everyone. Literally, I'm just telling you, Eric, when I read that, it did bring up these emotions that you're hearing me say right now, because I thought, how in the world did this test know this about me? You didn't know that this is what it was going to say. You just asked these multiple choice questions. And, I mean, I don't know if everybody else feels the same way when they take this test, but I felt so emotional after I read this. It really made me feel loved and good, and it made me look in the mirror and say, honey, you're an elephant. It doesn't have to do with whether you have a trunk or not. So I really recommend that people do this. So I'm just kind of interested in knowing a little bit more about this because it is personal. What pack is the elephant in?
So the elephants would be in the gatherer pack, and specifically their focus is on family. So, you know, in each pack there are four animal types. So obviously four packs and four animal types. If my math is correct,
16.
That means 16 types. And so within that gatherer pack, you know, since they focus on safety and security, when you think of the things that give us safety and security, there are two things I tend to think of. It's like family. It's like that idea that we have family and you take care of your family and take care of the people that you love and that are around you. And then duty, like our duty to society. Do we follow society's rules? Do we keep order? Even if we don't want to, do we follow the things that, you know, that we, do we follow the rules even if they don't benefit us? Does everyone pay their taxes correctly or accurately, you know? And so
right.
the elephants would be on the side that prioritizes family. Now, they also prioritize duty as well, but family generally comes first. And the distinction I make in the book was that if you have a parent who goes to a parent-teacher conference, and if the teacher goes and says, oh, you know, your kid is acting up, I'm not happy with their performance in class, generally speaking, the two animal types, personality types that follow the duty train of thought will side with the teacher. They will be like, you know, oh, I'm going to go home and make sure that they are not doing this because it's not that they don't love their kid. It's just that they feel it's their duty as parents to make sure that they're a fine, upstanding citizen and they grow into one. An elephant and a bear, or the elephant and bear types, which would be all both be gatherers, they would focus on family. So it's not necessarily that they would side with their kid against the teacher, but they might do things like tell the teacher, oh, you know, it's my fault. You know, I haven't been getting home. I've been getting home late, or I haven't been doing enough to help him or her, you know, so they might fall on a sword for their kid. So anyway, that's kind of the example I give in the book. But yeah, so elephants are all about providing for their loved ones, and not only their family, but they're also about building their family. That's why I chose elephants as an animal, because they're herders and they bring people into the herd, you know. So they might be that parent who tells their kid's friends, hey, you want to stay over for dinner, you know, things like that.
Oh, okay, I'm just curious because I don't know the answer, so why not ask? Where do you land?
I am a baboon, which is not the most flattering animal. I know that. Yeah, I don't think it's a flattering animal. You know, I mean, I heard people complain when I tell them they're a baboon.
I don't know. I've seen them in the wild. Well, I think they're pretty cool,
yeah,
frankly, but oh, go ahead.
They're always showing people their butts and stuff, and, you know, like, and they're screamers.
True.
But anyway, yeah, I'm a baboon, which it falls under the shaman pack. And so, of course, we are soul searchers. We seek our identity and self-knowledge, which kind of makes sense because that's kind of what put me on this path as a life coach in the first place, is I wanted to figure out more about myself because I was a week worried that my values were different than the people around me. And so I did a lot of research and studying on that, and that's kind of led me to this point where I can hopefully teach it to other people. And like a baboon, I just yell and scream it out to everyone. So that would be my role. It's baboons are known for their voice, and they kind of advocate for the ideas that they believe in, maybe sometimes too aggressively. But yeah, that's what I am.
Somehow I don't see you as aggressive, but, you know, I don't know. And I guess within a family, you can have all these different values, these different packs within the family. Your mom and dad might be in a different pack. Like you just mentioned, your siblings can be in a different pack. Perhaps your spouse, your children.
Oh, yeah.
It really does make for a very interesting society, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the key, too, is that's why it's important to try to understand that, because I think it's really unhealthy to try to change people. And I think we do that subconsciously or sometimes consciously, where we're like, oh, I'm going to, like, this person is not like me. They don't value the same things as me. So in order for me to hang around them, I need to make sure they do value the same things, which just seems wrong, right, and not particularly healthy emotionally.
Well, I could see that when it comes to the word values. That makes sense to me if you need to be an honest person. But what about values versus interests?
Well, you know, in terms of personality typing, our interests do tend to be based on our values, right? Like, but that's the interesting thing, though, is people can share the same interests and not be the same personality type. Like, or writers, like writing can be an interest, but anyone who knows their literature would probably know that Hemingway has a lot more in common with, let's say, Fitzgerald than Hemingway might have with Emily Dickinson. You know, like that's as far as you possibly can go, even though I know Emily Dickinson was a poet. But so like people can do the same things, but for different reasons. And I think where we fall into the trap of like just focusing on what someone does at the surface level, and we're just like, oh, okay, that person is an engineer, this person is an engineer, so they're the same. And it's like, well, no, they might have a different reason for doing it, which is maybe why this particular engineer tends to build interesting things and build a lot of inventions, but might not necessarily be the best at inspection versus this person who's a lot steadier and is much more detail-oriented, but might not necessarily be particularly inventive. So I think that's important to have that distinction.
But so let me ask you, I mean, I feel that I had a very successful marriage that ended abruptly. My husband was an engineer. I couldn't have been further away from an engineer than, you know, a football field. And yet we had this interesting shared experience as we, as the children were grown off to college, now it's just the two of us in the house. This engineer took on a whole different personality. I'm going to use your term. I wouldn't say that he was necessarily creative in his field as much as he was really intelligent and did things that required a lot of technology. But how he balanced that was in cooking. And the Food Network had just started. And all these chefs were on TV now all the time. And we ended up remodeling our kitchen. And I have like a chef's kitchen now that any chef would love to be in, except unless you're like me and you just use the microwave. But, you know, what can I tell you? He developed that side of his brain where being creative in the kitchen, what would you say about something like that?
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up because that actually reminds me a lot of my father, who's passed away. But he was very much like that, where he had a job that I don't necessarily know if he loved his job. He just did it, and he was a systems analyst. So, you know, he just enjoyed going to work and joking around with his friends. But he was a smith as well. So, because it sounds like your husband might have been a smith, where he got his creativity was cooking. He loved cooking, and like not cooking, like, you know how some people will say, like, I cook because I cook out of love, or that's like the secret ingredient, and here's my recipe book, or this book was my grandmother's and it's been passed down for generations, and that's great. But that's a different kind of value. I'd admit that's a gatherer value, and a lot of gatherers, of course, cook because that's part of providing and keeping the home safe and secure. But my father was very different. He was more like, yeah, let's not try this. Why not try this? Let's just experiment. Let's do something different. Like part of the fun for him was inventing a meal that he hadn't made before. That was the joy he got out of it. He wasn't cooking out of recipes. He was cooking based on experimentation. And it's cool. It shows that our values dictate our interests, and our values are dictated by our personality type. And it doesn't go the other way around. Our interests don't tell us who we are. It's, you know, our type, dictates that way.
It's funny because this is what he did, you know, but he was an engineer. So there was the menu for the week. Then there was the grocery list. Marcia, do we need more garlic? Look and see how are we fixed for rice, blah, blah, blah. So I would be writing these things down. Where my enjoyment came in, maybe this will sound really silly. I didn't mean to make this all about me, but obviously I am right now, is I love setting the table. I never met a dish I didn't like. And so that's where my creativity came in, because I was not like my brother that was an artist. I was not like my mother who was a seamstress and a knitter and could do all of those things. I was a talker. I've always been a communicator. I've always been interested in and observant of people. And so while Butch was that one that was doing the cooking, and I was the one that was thinking, oh, I wonder, that would look really great on a blue plate. Let's use the blue plates tonight. That's where my creativity came in, and that's where that kind of that partnership came in, which made that very, very enjoyable for both of us. He didn't have to worry about what he was going to plate it on. He just knew he was cooking it, right? And he had worked all day.
Right.
So, you know, it's just kind of funny. Kent, do you think that you can be both a butterfly and a shark?
Definitely, even though those two are similar in a lot of ways because they're both hunters. I know it's weird to think of a butterfly as a hunter, but it's just the term doesn't totally fit them, but specifically the shark, it's perfectly. But No, you can't be both, because there are definite differences. And anyone who's ever met a butterfly and met a shark and met them at the same time will definitely tell the difference, because there's just one, I hate to say it, but one just comes off as gentle and kind and nice, and the other one might come off as tough and mean. That's okay. You know, tough and mean is okay because they're also going to come off as strong. I do think a lot of that's where the gender programming comes into place. And it's perfect that we have this as a comparison, a butterfly and a shark, because if you're a man, if you're a male shark, then most of the time people are going to say, oh, you're tough. He's tough. He's strong. He's independent. You know, female sharks get the B word, you know, like people don't like that. They're like, oh, why is she so mean? You know, she's just a, she's such a, yeah. So on the flip side, a female butterfly, people are like, oh, she's so pretty. She's so perfect. She dresses so well. And she's so like gentle and like exactly what she has, that quote unquote feminine energy. But if you have a male butterfly, most of the time people just think he's gay. You know, and that's kind of just social programming. It's like what's been told that how in our heads how guys and girls should act, which is not true. I mean, my sister's a shark, so I definitely, growing up, I knew girls are not necessarily instinctively gentle and warm and friendly, which is okay. You know, I kind of respected it more, like the toughness and the strength. Yeah. You know,
that's really interesting. How do you think pop culture makes this kind of learning fun?
I think pop culture is one of those things where we get that. It's kind of like a Rosetta Stone where people know it generally, so I can kind of relate personality types to certain things, because people are always like, why are you bringing up Game of Thrones? I'm like, it's because I don't necessarily know your Uncle Bob, you know, or your cousin Jane. So it's kind of easy, but we both know who Daenerys Targaryen is, so I can kind of use that. And it's also fun. People want to know like what Harry Potter character they are, even though most of the time people want to be Harry, even though they really deep down inside they don't want to be Harry. So yeah, pop culture it's just one of those things that people are like, oh, I love knowing what Friends character I am, because I think it's something that we grow up with, and it just becomes, I guess, what was it, Campbell, or was it, gosh, now I'm forgetting. Oh, it was Jung, the collective unconscious, or the collective consciousness. Mm. And I think we just naturally just go to those archetypes, you know, like, so yeah, pop culture makes it a whole lot of fun, I think.
Well, you brought up Friends. I mentioned that my kids are visiting from Arizona, and my son has watched Friends for so many years that he can literally do the dialogue for every character on that show. It just cracks me up. But and we're going to the Dodger game tonight, so I'm just curious about this, because I don't know if you can answer this or not, so I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions about some notable people. And certainly, Shohei Ohtani, there isn't anybody, even if you don't like sports, that isn't familiar with this superstar on the Dodgers. What would you say about his personality type? Would you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, you know, like, obviously it's from what I know and what I see on TV and what I hear about him. But I'm a huge Dodger fan, so I do know a little bit more than the average person. You know, normally, if someone's an athlete, I almost automatically put them as a hunter. And then once I get different information, I might take them away from being a hunter. But a lot of athletes in general are hunters. Like, the percentages, if someone's an athlete and you guess hunter, pack, more often than not, you're going to be correct, just because it just fits. Mm-hmm. Like, hunters like visceral excitement. There's nothing more visceral than playing a sport, and there's a lot of risk in playing a sport. There's a lot of hustling that you have to do, literally and figuratively, to make it in the big leagues. So Shohei would definitely be a hunter. And oftentimes people that obsessive with their craft, I know he's known for being obsessive with his craft and really, like, taking so many swings in the batting cage. Oftentimes those personality types are sharks. Like, the typical shark athlete would be Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant, you know, where you see them, they got that killer instinct, and they shoot 1,000 shots, jump shots, you know, every morning. But I don't really see Shohei Ohtani as being very mean. Everything, what people say about him is he's very soft-spoken, and he's very kind, and he's very fun-loving and very gentle, and almost childlike in a way. So all that being said, I would guess that he's a butterfly, which is a hunter type.
And, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
and
you know, you made me think of another.
I'm
sure that's the case because you conjured up another thought. I'm also a big basketball fan, and I'm so thrilled that Caitlin Clark is bringing attention to women's basketball now. And I would imagine she's got to be a hunter too, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And she's definitely more aggressive. I guess she's a shark. She definitely seems like more of the shark type, the Jordan type. I don't know. I mean, I know a lot about how she plays, like, on the court. I don't necessarily know her practice level off it, but I'd imagine my guess would be that she's also pretty obsessive and takes, I'm guessing, 1,000 jump shots every day. And that just screams shark. I know she plays a lot with a chip on her shoulder, and she talks a lot of trash, which I love that she does that. And to me, that all signs point to a shark. You know, she's just very specific, very goal-oriented, and direct.
You know, you used another word there that I hadn't heard you use before. Are hunters slash sharks of one of those, because I know there's 16 altogether, do they tend to be obsessive?
You know, it depends
or
on
just,
what,
just
I guess
depends.
We all obsess. I guess it's what we obsess about, right? Like, we all can obsess, and obsess is probably the negative side of things. Like, a gatherer would obsess too much about the rules. So, at worst, you might get a gatherer, and they'll be like, you know, in school, they're the snitch, or the one who's always like, no, it has to be this way, you know, at work. So I think with a hunter, if they're going to get obsessive, it'll really be about their craft. Like, they might get too focused on being great at what they're working on, maybe at the absence of their family life or their friends. Or, you know, Michael Jordan had that famous quote, right, where Phil Jackson told him there's no I in team. And Jordan was like, yeah, but there's an I in win. You know, and so I think they might get too obsessed with their objective and forget about the people that got them there and are helping them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so with the hunters, it's definitely more about being obsessed with a skill set, like a very specific skill.
Got it. Well, let's switch occupations here for a moment because you're so good at doing this. I'm a big TV person, and right now I'm really obsessing, we'll put that quote around that, on The Voice. And I just love Reba McEntire. I just love everything about her. And it's not that I don't think that she's talented, because she is talented. I'm really a fan of her personality and her genuineness and her demeanor. If you had to guess Reba McEntire's pack, where do you think she would fit in?
So I don't watch The Voice, but obviously I know who Reba McEntire is.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to keep guessing Hunter for these things, but there's a reason. I mean, you're picking a singer and athlete, and those singers tend to also be hunters because for obvious reasons there's a lot of, like, risk in performing. My guess would be she's a peacock because she seems very loud and very, like, demonstrative, but she's a natural performer. So my guess would be a peacock. So a peacock would be, like, the louder, more physical version of the butterfly. They're very similar in a lot of ways, but who's a really famous? Dolly Parton would be like, if you're going to pick a singer
a
stereotypical peacock, it's Dolly Parton. And I do think there are similarities between Reba McEntire and Dolly Parton.
I do,
so
too.
That would be my guess. Yeah.
And the peacocks,
you know.
Right. And peacocks are gatherers.
Peacocks are hunters.
That's what I meant to say. I'm sorry. I meant to say hunters.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of terms that I'm throwing out there.
Well, that's okay. I like it. I don't know how many people are taking notes. I'm taking some. So, you know, I'm just curious about you. I want to kind of pull this back to you right now, Eric. And based on all that you've learned and knowing what you know today, what advice do you think you would give your younger self?
You know, it's probably the same advice that I give a lot of my students. I have a lot of young students that I coach, and mainly my wheelhouse is junior high. I think it's because, I guess middle school now, right? But that's my wheelhouse.
Okay, yeah.
I think it's because at that point, parents have decided, I do not know what to do with my kid. You know, whatever, you know, I do not know what I'm doing with them because for some reason now they're arguing with me and they just don't want to do what I tell them to do. And it's usually around middle school where I'm like, okay, that's my wheelhouse. That's what I work with. And that's every kid, right? That's all of us. And I probably give my younger self, especially around that time, the same advice I give my students, which is that the things that you are being told are important might not necessarily be as important to you as they are to other people. They might not, but it's always good to just consider the possibility that they aren't. Because I think when we're younger, we're told so much how important school is, and I'm not saying school isn't important for some people, but, you know, let's face it, for some people, it's not the most important thing. And for me, it was not necessarily the most important thing. You know, I did go to school, and I did okay. For some reason, I got into UCLA. I don't know how I did that. But, like, at the end of the day, I think I focused so much on school, I didn't focus as much on the things I should have focused maybe more on outward stuff, like maybe like interning or writing creatively and, you know, submitting my things to like publications just to try things out, because it's that learning process and it just took me a little longer to get there. And I think that's right. The advice I give to kids now is just don't focus. I know they say school is important, but you know it's also important, like learning and also trying to figure out what you love doing and working really hard
right.
on that. You know, so that's what I tell myself.
I could so see you, visualize you on a stage. I know I saw you on our local television station. I think you were on another station as well. I could so see you on a stage doing a TED Talk and speaking to so many people. Do you ever do that?
You know, I used to do not that large of a scale, but I used to give talks with students. Like I used to do it for a couple universities or local universities in the area. And mainly it was about the personality typing. But back then it wasn't as developed as it was now, or as it is now rather. And I definitely hadn't written a book on it, but yeah, I would love to teach it to a larger group of people. The unfortunate thing with teaching to a large group is I'd have to just do general statements of like, this is what the types are and figure yourself out. The nice thing about coaching is I get to like make it individual and I get to craft the experience based on my students. But I think
and
I'm
when
naturally
you coach,
a speaker, so.
You are. And when you coach, Eric, and say somebody's listening to this and they live in Portland, do you do your coaching on Zoom? I mean, can people coach? Can you do that without? Oh, that's good to know. And they can just visit your website to learn how to do that, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can just send me a note through the website and let me know what they want to work on and what issues they're having.
That's
and we
neat.
Can just I would craft experience towards them.
That's so. In these last few moments that we have together, I'm guessing that you might have an answer to this, and that is, well, what's up next for you? Do you have something that's out there with your right hand out, and you're going, you know what? Here's my hand. My hand is wide open. And this is what I'd like to do next. What's that? What does that look like for you?
You know, I'd love to write another book. I think a lot of times I'm getting asked a lot about that. The number one question I often get asked about from people about personality typing is, oh, who should I be with? You know, like basically romantic, in a romantic context. And since I talk about it briefly in the book, but since the book is designed to teach people how to understand and read people, and it's not necessarily filled with prescriptions, otherwise it would have been, you know, like War and Peace long. So I was planning on doing that for the sequel, would be just a book totally devoted to like coupling. Like, oh, if you're this type and you're with this animal, this is how you're going to get along and this is how you're not going to get along. Because my philosophy is always like, you can be with anyone you want, but you have to be okay with the conflict. And if you're not, then you probably should leave that person, because it's pretty bad if you're trying to change it. You know, you can't change people. You know, you just can only understand where they're coming from. But yeah, that would be my next goal is to like write that book and, you know, and hopefully I can. I hope I get that opportunity. If I can sell enough of The Power of Personality, then, you know, I definitely will write that second book.
How long did it take you to write The Power of Personality? I'm just curious.
You know, I get that question a lot, and when I say it took me three months, which
three
I know
months?
A lot of people are like, oh my gosh, 3 months. Yeah, it's short, or it seems short, but I also own a creative space here in Culver City, Los Angeles. So, you know, I'm sitting here for the whole day just hosting the space, so what else am I going to do but write? And most of it had already, like, the the template and the organizational mm-hmm. structure of the book was already in my head, and it was already like very sure. easy to plan out. And a lot of the portraits had already been of the types had already written and featured on my website. So it was a lot of like, it was a culmination of a lot of the work that I had put in over the past, I don't know, 20 years.
How satisfying. I'm like putting my hand over my heart as I say that. How gratifying and satisfying that must have been for you to actually publish this after all of this experience that you've had. That must have really felt good.
Oh yeah, it was a great feeling to have, especially when people tell you that how much reading it helps them understand themselves and maybe
sure.
how it's pushing them towards having a happier life. I think that's like really satisfying, especially because I joke around
it
so
is.
Much in the book. You know, so
that's just great. Well, I'm really glad that your publicist found me, because by her finding me, that means I found you. And it might also mean I found myself. And I really think that that's also a key component to this conversation. So thank you so much for joining me for today and sharing your experiences. And I really do hope people go out and buy your book and that they will then take the time to learn about themselves. And maybe you decide you learn about yourself and you think, you know, I'd like to make a little bit of an adjustment now that I understand this about myself and perhaps look into that. So just thank you once again, Eric, for spending this time with me. It's really been terrific.
Oh, it was a pleasure. And thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. All right, everybody, go out and buy that book. And then tune in next week, because, you know, I do this every week, and I love it because what did I decide I was? An elephant. So have a great week, everybody. Bye for now.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.